Security property management did not include information about reloads with these forms. Previously, when it was time to renew my rental agreement, I would always opt for month-to-month because I wanted to be able to give a 30-day notice in case I qualify for any other properties that are being offered by various social service agencies throughout the Portland area, specifically the North-Northeast relocation. I have applied for programs that allow Native Black Portlanders to relocate back to North Portland based on a point system. I need to stay month to month because if I was tied to a lease, I would not be able to pay the lease break fee of $1,500. It is imperative that I keep the 30-day notice option in case I receive notification that one or any of these properties that I have applied for has an opening. Security Properties Residential, the company that manages the apartment complex where I live, decided not to change the lease rental agreements and that tenants can stay on a month-to-month without having to pay an extra $100 fee, which would raise my rent over 10% in a year, which is illegal. SPR stated that it would cost them too much to pay all of the tenants who are requesting reload. SPR offers mixed housing that has openings for people who are over 55, disabled, refugee, and low-income tenants. Not everyone was affected by the lease changes, and I don't have the statistics. All I can say is that it must have been a substantial amount for SPI to decide not to change the monthly contract agreements.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Good afternoon. Good
evening. Hi. My name is Sammy Black, but I'm reading testimony of Kelly Francois, who had to leave. So from now on, I'm Kelly. I'm a small landlord. I live in one side of a duplex and rent out the other side. I started becoming interested in tenants' rights, and specifically relocation money, when I was in the process of buying our duplex. The duplex tenants were no-cause evicted before the duplex went on the market, and that fact was listed in the sales contract. Shortly after we entered into the contract, the temporary relocation ordinance was enacted, and it was retroactive. The sellers of the duplex tried to get us, as the buyers, to rewrite the contract to where one side of the duplex tenants would get screwed out of the relocation money. Of course, I did not agree to this underhanded behavior. Both sides of the duplex got the reload money, and one was able to purchase a condo and the other purchased a house. I saw firsthand how relocation works to maintain the financial stability of our tenant residents. I agree with removing the small landlord exemption from the relocation. All tenants deserve to be protected from the costs of being forced to move or being priced out from large rent increases. It is very easy for me as a landlord to avoid paying relo if I can't afford it by not making my tenants move or raising the rent too much. It's a cost that I can control through my own actions. As I hear about other exemptions being contemplated for owner-occupied duplexes, I worry that my rental will not be able to compete with units that are protected by relo assistance. In trying to protect me, the unintended consequence may be that this exemption actually hurts me by making my unit less desirable to tenants in the know. I received a letter in the mail last week stating that I was being required to fix the sidewalks in front of my house at the cost of approximately $3,600. I had to chuckle when it dawned on me that I was being forced to fix the sidewalks when I can't control how the tree roots grow. This was an out-of-the-blue expense, one that actually causes a financial hardship to my family. Were the city council worrying about the financial hardship to the mom-and-pop landlords when it comes to the sidewalks in front of my house? Does this city care more about sidewalks than its tenant residents?
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thanks for all three of you.
Next three are Bernetta Parker, maybe Pamela Neck, and Madry Page. Steve Walker. Kendall Borton. Let me get to the list. Kendall Borton.
So one. And folks, we're not going to be taking a vote tonight, obviously. So those of you who are reading for other people, we've had a lot of people do that. Let's not do that because people can still submit their own written testimony, so we don't have to have everything read on the record tonight. And I think we're in danger of losing our quorum. So if you're here and you're on the list and you want to testify, that's great. But let's have everybody else email in. And the list has been closed. Somebody raised their hand and said, can I join the list? No, the list is closed, but you may submit written testimony.
All right. Pamela Connect's testimony will be submitted separately via email.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
We got, say it again, Kendall Borton, Steve Walker, Madry Page, Mike Burnett, Alan Carpenter, Lucy Shelby, Mary Beth Henry, Edith Gillis, Harrison Lee. So come on up. If I called your name, come up. Okay, we got three here.
Commissioner Fritz.
Keep going. That's all right.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. I'm Alan Carpenter. I'm a housing provider, a property manager, and real estate services company. We have we've just found and been working with seven clients who are wanting to sell their seven single-family residents in the city of Portland, wanting to move their money to Vancouver, Clackamas, and Washington counties. I have colleagues that have principals that have sold their Portland properties, moving to Marion, Benton, and Lane counties, and getting out of the rental business in Portland altogether. So I want to say thank you for helping my business. Our sales are doing quite well this year. The housing crisis is a simple supply and demand economics. The ordinance does nothing to address the housing crisis and only makes small landlords like myself want to get out of the business. So I got another minute, but I'm all good. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Hi. I'm Lucy Shelby. I live in my triplex in northeast Portland, and I very much want to put my two cents in. I think it was Ms. Molina's request to maybe look at year-long leases and, below 3% rent increases. Possibility for exemption. I also am in my house because I'm a senior and bought it so that I could age in place. And one of the things I'm going to want to do, whether it is family or actually I hope it's not family. I hope it's tenants who want some really would really like a really nice low income opportunity to help take care of me before I have to go to some other assisted living or something like that. Right now I get along really well walking to, Trader Joe's and all that sort of stuff. But I've had a stroke and who knows what's going to happen. So I'm just kind of want to put that out there as the single landlord. And the other thing that really interested me was when they were talking about exemptions for the whole building exemptions for the tax credit properties. I would love to have a whole unit exemption for my little triplex, which I think if I go after those little individual exemptions, I could probably get. But, boy, it would sure be easier to just sort of do it once and be done. The other thing is I have a homeless guy living sheltering himself in my garage, since my garage it would be considered, in quotes, uninhabitable. But he uses my kitchen and my bathroom, and it keeps him from sleeping in people's doorways in the neighborhood. And he's been very useful in helping me do some gardening and cleaning up and things like that. So while I guess I'm a small landlord, my heart in a lot of ways is with the tenants. So, I had to go out and join the Rental Housing Alliance, and I do support what Juan Garcia was saying about exemptions for more than one unit there. But I was afraid I was going to get sued by, Portland Tenants Union and all the other guys out here who I really do in a lot of ways stand with. So,
thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you
very much. Thank you for being here. Good afternoon.
Hello, I'm Edith Gillis. I've been a homeowner, I'm a tenant, and I'm preparing to be a landlord. When I was young, I learned that the American dream is that our public servants are dedicated to providing liberty, equality, and justice for all with equal treatment under the law. I learned that contracts are legal agreements between equal parties. They freely enter in or out of for mutual good, governed by society's laws of what's benefiting all society and the environment. The opposite is where one benefits at the expense of the other, such as slavery or in a conspiracy for extortion or theft. I've learned that the laws already benefit landlords and that they can charge upfront for reasonable expenses to provide safe, fair, accessible housing. And they pay their fair share of taxes. Well, I was wrong. I thought in return, tenants should be able to pay reasonable rent and take proper care of it, only do reasonable wear and tear, and that they should also be able to have paid upfront their reasonable expenses. Moving at no-cause evictions has a reasonable expectation of cost that is far more than 3-4 months of rent and housing expenses and hookup and health care and time taken off and transportation and maybe risk of the loss of the job and health. That should be paid up front. And it should be for every tenant. Everyone should be treated fairly under law. Housing is a right for everyone, regardless of the landlord. I would provide it as a landlord. And if we make exceptions, then we're not being the American dream. We're being guilty of conspiracy for extortion, theft, and slavery. Please don't do that. Please pass this with no exemptions. Thank you.
Thank you. Next three, please.
I show four more people on the list. The next are Harrison Lee, Marcel Gizmundo, and Brad Hamer. And the last one is Matt Williams. So those are the last four who signed up.
Were you the one who wanted to come up? Come on up. These are our last three. Good evening.
Hello, I'm Brad Hamer. I'm an owner-operator. I just have some concerns about the relocation fees and paying them to the tenants before they move out. And if they choose to stay and they don't pay the money back, basically what happens? And then I also have a couple other questions. How did this ties into the URM upcoming stuff? I'm sure you guys have heard about it. With the unreinforced masonry buildings and some of the updates that are going to have to be done there for seismic upgrades. And then also, what is a no-cause eviction? I'm third generation. I don't know what it is. It seems like 99% of the time you're trying to get somebody out, there's a reason. That's really all I got.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Matt Williams. I grew up in poverty down in California on an 8 to 10 year waiting list for Section 8 housing vouchers. We have something similar to that currently. Now, and for the last 15 years, I've been counseling clients to transfer their assets and their investment strategies from Wall Street and other investments to be providing housing, which I think is significant. If we don't have an opportunity to have that be an investment strategy, then it turns into a shortage of supply. When it no longer makes sense financially, people stop investing. That minimizes the number of units that are on the market. And so a lot of the clients that I have, especially in the single family side, are looking at either one or two individual units that they plan on using in lieu of Social Security and in lieu of having their kid not go to college because they're utilizing it as an investment strategy. Obviously, everyone is not going to be able to do that. But this ordinance is really flawed in that it pits the tenant against the landlord and the landlord against the tenant. And one of the challenges that we have is that these items are handled. The penalty is addressed and assessed to the landlord because they're a landlord. That's it. The benefit goes to the tenant because they're a tenant. That's it. It has nothing to do with means. I'd be very interested in hearing the housing comment on this, because while there's an 8 to 10 year waiting list on Section 8 housing vouchers, this past September, as I understand, they have 3,000 people on a waiting list. They had 16,000 applicants. I pay a tenant who makes $250,000 a year, $4,500. That does not help people in low income. It does not help tenants that need it, and it goes to people because they're a tenant. I think that's an improper way to handle it, and if it was really the core value, Mr. Mayor, then that one of the ways that you could adjust this is to put yourself in a situation where you could not just say, let's penalize the landlords and benefit all the tenants. Let's put ourselves in a position where we can accept money either from landlords or from all of our core value Portland residents and apply those funds directly to those who are means-based and on a waiting list that have no home currently.
Interesting. Thank you. Appreciate that. And I may ask the Housing Bureau about that question, because I know we'd had conversations about that, and it quickly got headed off for reasons that I can't remember, but I will remember when we have them back. Good afternoon.
Good evening. Hi, my name is Antonia Elizabeth Martinez Lawler. Thanks for giving me the chance to talk. I really appreciate it. I'm an independent contractor, female entrepreneur, and landlord of a mom-and-pop owner-occupied duplex with a 30-year mortgage. A little bit about me as a landlord and a little bit about my tenants. In my career so far, I've had two long-term tenants. The first couple asked to break their lease after several years to follow a job opportunity, and the next tenants asked to break their lease after several years since they had been saving up and successfully bought a home in Portland. We let them break the lease and also dismissed several other minor infractions since there was a relationship and trust. We also never raised a rent on a renter throughout the years they stayed with us. To sum it up, they were all great tenants. With our current tenants, it's the first time I've ever felt tension and that we might need to protect ourselves. It can't be denied that the trust has been eroded. I see that there is a problem, but I also see several flaws in the ordinance. I feel like the fee will only help the first generation of renters. Once they are out, rent will go up, and then and then I also feel like the fee almost guarantees that rents will be raised. And then also, how do we know how the fees will be spent? Think about this. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate it. Thanks to all three of you.
One more person.
Oh, who?
Julia DeGraw. She was on the list.
Yes, she was. Come on up. Thank you, all three of you.
There was a lot of list jockeying. This was a really exciting experience of what it's like to have one of these really long days. So yes, for the record, my name is Julia DeGraw, and I live in the Monte Villa neighborhood, and I am running for Portland City Council position 2. And I don't have anything particularly new to say other than I am really thankful to see the evolution of this process. I testified earlier in favor of making sure that relocation would apply to all landlords, including those who only own a single unit, and I'm glad to see that happening. As was discussed earlier, I share a lot of the concerns that were brought up about, tidying it up. You know, we got the devil's in the details, of course, and I express some of the concerns that folks have about closing, about some of the exemptions. But at the end of the day, this is a really big step in the right direction. People, and it's the best tool you have in your toolbox as the city, given the limitations that we have at the state level. I fully support working to go down there to Salem to make sure that we can actually end no-cause evictions. But until then, I really encourage you to continue to stay strong on passing this relocation, making it permanent, making it apply to all landlords, and cleaning up some of those so those details that clearly still need to be worked out. But at the end of the day, I just want to thank you, and I agree completely about the conversation you had with Joanne Hardesty earlier, Mayor Wheeler. We need leaders that lead from their values and that can change their mind when they've received new information or have a new experience. We need to be able to do that in order to lead in a way that serves the people. So thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. Thank you, everybody. Great testimony all over the board. Could we get the Housing Bureau back up? I'm sure there are some pressing questions. I've got a couple that were just raised during testimony. The first question, somebody asked if we could define more clearly what is a no-cause eviction. And I believe it was this gentleman in the back who'd asked that question.
I think that Oregon is one of Oregon has a prohibition on enacting rules that would require a landlord to give a reason for a termination of tenancy. Many other states or localities have rules that prescribe a landlord must give reasons and certain reasons that would qualify for a termination of tenancy. Oregon is not a state that allows that. So you know, I'm sure that in many landlords' minds they may have particular reasons, but tenants are not informed of those reasons when tenancies are terminated by landlords. It is not a requirement under Oregon state law.
Very good. And we have a policy coming before the council at some point. It is not directly linked to this policy at all, but it's related to unreinforced masonry buildings.
Yes.
And it's my understanding this ordinance does not cover that. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So it will be discussed within the context of the unreinforced masonry discussion. So I would encourage folks, if they have insights or information related to unreinforced masonry, if you wouldn't mind just shooting me an email at mayorwheeler@portlandoregon.gov. I'd love to get your perspectives on that as we shape that policy. And then there was this last question that was raised, and I'm sorry, I don't remember what the conversation was originally around. This applies to all tenants regardless of income. Mm-hmm. What do you say to that criticism?
We test the landlords.
Not you. I wanted to hear their opinion. So thank you.
So this did come up in the Relocation Assistance Technical Advisory Committee, and it was actually in the context of the hardship waiver, and that if the city were to establish a system that would also create some sort of income qualification for renters, that there should be, as a compromise, the group agreed there should be a hardship process for the landlords, but everyone acknowledged it would be a longer term solution because you have to put in place a lot more administrative structure in order to actualize a policy framework.
Very good. Thank you. Colleagues, any further questions?
What's the process for a for cause eviction?
You would file an FED or eviction detainer in court after a number of notices required under state law for the tenant. And you would be going to eviction court. Sometimes just the filing of those notices actually result in a tenant moving out. But if forced, you then go through the court process, and it's adjudicated at Multnomah County Circuit Court.
So moving forward, I just got back from England. In fact, it's 3 a.m. on the time I was at yesterday, so I feel I'm doing – so I was standing up.
All-nighter.
And pulling an all-nighter here. Very similar situation there, although they have a lot more public housing, but still they do also rely on private landlords and have a similar problem. So it was amazing to go 5,000 miles and find it's exactly the same situation, even though a different construct. But the city of Aberdeen, Scotland, apparently has done something that looks at both forecourt, well, the whole process of evictions in general, and has done something like this, although I don't think it's with Relo, but I just suggest that there may be some things that would make things better for everybody, because they were able, although there were they put in protections for their renters, the landlords came in and supported it because there was also some things to make it easier when there is a problem. Because hopefully we all have agreement that when there the tenant has done nothing wrong, that the tenant should be able to stay. And if the tenant has done something wrong, then it shouldn't be so hard to have to go through an extensive court process to fix that. And which also, of course, has the effect of leaving the tenant with a record of a for-cause eviction, which I imagine is then very difficult to rent if that has happened. Yes. So just a suggestion that we should...
We'll definitely look that up. I'd be intrigued to see what Aberdeen is doing.
Thank you.
There were two issues that a number of people raised, including, I believe, Commissioner Udaly, that could be potential subjects of discussion for the RSC. One was this question of creating a hardship policy.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of people mentioned that in their testimony. And then there was this idea that somebody had proffered a incentive in exchange for a long-term agreement to hold the rent at a certain level of affordability. Mm-hmm. And the individual who testified had proposed 2.5%. But I thought that, you know, without commenting on the particular structure or the particular percentage that she offered, I thought it was an interesting idea, and that could potentially be an area of study for the RSC as well.
Absolutely.
Any other questions, Commissioner Udaly?
I just wanted to add to the conversation about just cause versus no cause eviction. To be clear, right now we are preempted at the state level from defining just cause. I think it's clear from the landlord testimony that landlords would actually really benefit from clear definitions of just cause, because there are undoubtedly situations where it's very hard to prove, as we heard from one landlord, that a tenant is in fact breaking the rules of their rental agreement or lease that would be legitimate just cause reasons. Unfortunately, not having just cause standards also makes it very easy for bad actors on the other side to retaliate against tenants who request repairs, who for whatever reason want to discriminate against a tenant and or may just personally not like a tenant, which I don't think is would qualify as a just cause for taking away someone's housing. So that is something, you know, it's not going to come in up in the short session, unfortunately. I hope we get to return to that conversation in earnest next year. And I do want to note that while pursuing a just cause or eviction in court does require some added steps and expense to landlords, there's a reason our eviction court is called an eviction mill. And it's because landlords have it easier in that process typically than tenants, who typically cannot afford legal representation and are left to negotiate with a landlord or frequently with a landlord's attorney or representative. And the outcomes are not necessarily what that tenant is entitled to by law. So I do, it's a maybe rare occasion where I am hearing legitimate complaints from landlords. Unfortunately, we need to lobby our state legislature to give us back our regulatory tools so that we can manage these issues locally.
Thank you. That's really helpful. And in terms of the cost, would it be more expensive for a landlord to pay the relocation fee or to take some, or to go through the four-cause eviction?
I'm going to venture to guess that the typical four-cause eviction is much cheaper than RELO, but there are, of course, going to be occasional circumstances where that battle is protracted and it could be more expensive than RELO.
I would say that's correct.
Thank you. Very helpful. Thank you, everybody, for all your testimonies. It's been a very good hearing.
Excellent. So we have an ordinance. We have two open amendments. We will move those to second reading. And is that next week or 2 weeks, or is that to be determined?
I think we can move them to second reading until we voted on them.
You didn't vote on the amendments.
So we just continue. Okay, so are we continuing to next week or 2 weeks?
That's my understanding, is next week.
Next week? Is that right, Michelle? Good. All right. Thank you, everybody. We are adjourned.